Okay, we're now making a jump. We were on Yud Dalet Amud Beis, or Aleph, whatever. So we're going to skip now. We're going to be skipping now, because really the rest is not talking about Kiddushin at all. All the next Mishnayos, they start, just like it says, how is a woman acquired, which was how we started our Mishnah. Then it goes to how is an Eved Kanani acquired, how is an Eved Ivri acquired. And so all the ideas of kinyanim, which frankly they're great in yanim, but we only have limited time in this mesechta. So I'm going to take a jump now to Chaf Tes Amud Aleph, 29a. And you'll find it's very interesting Gemara. It's very interesting Gemara. And just like we did about 12 blot till the end of the year, till December. So we'll do 12 bot until Pesach. And then after Pesach, do a little bit in the second chapter. Okay, so we're going to start at 29a. Okay, we're going to start the Mishnah. Now, a lot of the words of the Mishnah will not be clear, and the Gemara is going to explain them. But you're going to find it's very interesting Gemara, and not so technical. The first few blot, I think you'll enjoy them. Okay, we all got the place, and it's up there, 29b. It's in your same, it's not in the small art scroll.
No, okay. A or B?
29a on the Mishnah. So we'll have time to over the weekend to get any Gemaras you need. Okay, there's about six statements that the Mishnah is going to make, and each one needs to be explained in the Gemara. Number one, Kol Mitzvos HaBein Al Ha'av. Now, this is a very ambiguous line, but simple meaning is all the mitzvahs of a son that are upon a father. Oh, by the way, just take a look at the notes here. As I said, the Mishnayos of the first chapter had until now discussed various aspects of kinyanim, acquisitions, and the following Mishnah represents a departure from this general theme. Ritva suggests Rabbi Yehuda Nasi place this Mishnah here in Tractate Kiddushin because of its peripheral relevance to the concept of marriage. The Mishnah deals with a father's obligations towards his son, one of which is to help him find a wife. So this is going to be the connection to Kiddushin over here. Okay. So we say all the mitzvahs that are on a son, okay, well, the Gemara is going to explain this line because it's ambiguous. All the obligations of the son upon a father, okay, who's responsible to make sure it happens? Anoshim chayovim, men are chayiv, meaning a father is obliged to make it happen. Vinoshim peturis, and women are not obliged, they're exempt, that means the mothers. Okay, that's statement number one, which the Gemara will clarify. The first sugya will be discussing this first line. Next statement. V'chol mitzvahs ha'av al ha'ben, all the obligations of a father that are upon a son, these are now the things, and the Gemara is going to explain this as well, but it means the things that a son has to do for a father, or a child has to do for a parent. Echad anoshim v'echad noshim chayovim, both men and women are obliged to take care of that. So as the Gemara will explain, so the first line is saying mitzvahs upon a child, a son, so there are certain ones that the father has to make sure that the son does. What would be one that comes to mind very quickly?
Teaching Torah.
Even quicker than that.
Supporting.
The kid's just born.
Bris
Mila. Right? So that's the first obligation.
What about the obligation of the first son to purchase him back?
Also. So the Gemara is going to list a number of mitzvahs. But these are mitzvahs that the son cannot do by himself. Certainly not in the beginning of his life. So therefore, who has that responsibility? There's a father and a mother. It's the father, not the mother. Per se, legally. We're not saying a mother doesn't raise a child. We're talking about particular mitzvahs to make sure the mitzvah has to get done. That is the mother's obligation to make sure that the father's obligation to the mitzvah gets done. On the reverse, when we're talking about taking care of parents, the mitzvahs that we have towards parents, there we say the son is obliged, not the daughter, which will be explained in the Gemara. It has to be explained because that's not such a clear-cut statement. So that's statement number two. So now that we're talking about taking care of other people's obligations of mitzvahs, so now we move to the next rule. V'chol mitzvahs aseh shehazman grama. Any positive mitzvah which is caused by time. In other words, you could only do it at a certain time, such as shaking a lulav on Sukkot or things like that. The golden rule is, anashim chayovim, men are obliged, v'nashim peturis, and women are exempt. Doesn't mean to say that they can't do it, but if they do it, they do it as someone who has not been obliged to do it. That's rule number three. Rule number four. V'chol mitzvah sase shelo hazman grama. And any positive mitzvah that is not a time-bound mitzvah. So what would be an example of that? Well, putting a mezuzah on your door. It's not a specific time to do it. Every door has to have a mezuzah. And it's not like only in the morning do you put it on. Right? So it has to be down there. Or let's say returning a lost object. That's a positive mitzvah. It's not a time-bound mitzvah per se. It's not only a certain amount of time in which you can do it. So therefore, the rule is, echad anoshim ve'echad hanoshim chayavim. Both men and women are obliged in that mitzvah. So we have so far four rules. Next, v'chol mitzvahs lo sase. What about negative commandments? You're not allowed to eat treif. You're not allowed all the non-alloweds in the world. Bein shahazman grama, doesn't matter if the time causes the mitzvah. Bein shalo hazman grama, doesn't matter if the time does not cause the mitzvah. Echad ha-noshim ve-echad ha-noshim chayovim, doesn't matter men and women, they are both obliged in that because it's just a question of not doing it. So there's no reason to make a difference. When we're talking about a time-bound mitzvah, the Gemara will explain later on, there's reasons to tell us why a woman would not be obliged if it's time-bound. Because she may not have all the time to do things. I mean, the simplest, although not the full explanation, is a woman with taking care of children, she's not in control of her time, as it were. So you make her do a thing by a certain specific time frame, that's not fair. However, not to do an Avera, well, you can always not do an Avera. So therefore, women are obliged to say, and with the following exceptions, that women are not obliged in negative mitzvahs. There's a few exceptions to this. And what is that? Number one, in other words, here's the negative ones that a woman is not obliged to keep. Chutz, with the exception of number one, mibal takif, ubal tashchis, ubal tatam elameisim. Okay, she's not, now we know a man is obliged not to round the corners of his head. You have to keep your pace. A man's obliged to keep his pace. There's another one of Baal Tashchish. You're not allowed to destroy the corners of the beard. That's why you can't shave with a blade around the cheekbone area. Those are two transgressions for a man. That does not apply to a woman. A woman does not have to have pace. A woman does not have to have... if a woman wants to shave with a blade every day, she's more than welcome to do it. Even though it's a negative mitzvah, and she should be obliged to keep it, we'll see why. The Gemara later will discuss this, that she's not obliged. And the third one is, ubal tatam elameisim, not to become tamei to the dead. We're talking about now a Kohen, who is not allowed to become tamei to the dead. So now, what happens if a Kohen has a son and a daughter? So the son cannot be tamei to the dead, but the daughter can be tamei to the dead. And as footnote 17 says, why? Because the source says, it says by in Parshas Emor, say to the sons of Aaron. So the sons means to the males, and therefore not the daughters of Kohanim that are not included in that prohibition. So that becomes the final rule, that although women are obliged in all negative mitzvahs, however, they're not obliged in those three for reasons, and the other two, the Gemara will give the reasons for this, why by cutting off the corners does not apply to a woman. Okay, that's the Mishnah. We'll just briefly go to the notes. Just gotta wait for it to warm. This is the upgraded version. Every time you come to it, it has to say goodbye for a minute. This is the upgraded, this is the good version. See, because all these notes I worked on over the vacation. Okay, So there it is. Now the normal style we have for describing Mishnah doesn't really apply here. It's just a list of rules. So this will be a quick review. The situation is which mitzvahs apply to certain people and not other people. That's the kind of topic I gave for this Mishnah. Rule number one, any mitzvah of the son on the father is obligatory for men. Women are exempt. Rule one. Rule two, any mitzvah of the father on the son is obligatory for men and women. Okay, that's rule number two. Rule number three, that means what you have to do for the parents, right? Kids taking care of parents. First one is parents taking care of kids. Second one is kids taking care of parents. Number three, any mitzvah saseh shehazman grama, which means a mitzvah to do something that applies only at certain times, is obligatory for men. Women are exempt. Four, any mitzvah saseh, it's a positive mitzvah that applies at all times, is obligatory for men and women. Next, any lav, a mitzvah to refrain from something, whether or not it's man grama, is obligatory for men and women, with three exceptions, which are, point six, women may round the corners of the head, shave the beard, and become tamei mes. Okay, that's the first Mishnah. Now, what we're going to do, these are a bunch of small sugyas now. I was debating how to set it up, because they're so small, but I'm making them each different sugyas, but I don't feel I have to keep writing the conclusions and this and that, because it's so short, I don't have to do more than this. And we're going to look at every one of these points. Starting with the first statement of the Mishnah. The wording of the Mishnah was very not clear. So the Gemara wants to understand what exactly is the Mishnah saying. When the Mishnah said the words, kol mitzvahs ha-ben al ha'av, which, you know, when you translate the words, it's hard to understand what does it mean. The mitzvahs of a son on a father. The question is, who's responsible for who? It's an ambiguous line. What did the Mishnah mean when it said, the mitzvahs of a son on a father? So Gemara is going to try to figure out, let's start from the reverse, the way that it's not, and to show why it can't be that way, so we'll know what is the way that it is. So the Gemara says, if you want to say, and this is the incorrect way of doing it, call mitzvahs the mechayev bra. If it means the obligations that the mitzvahs of a son in taking care of his father, to perform for his father, right? In other words, we're talking about a child fulfilling the mitzvahs they have to do for a father, which is, there's two mitzvahs that children have for parents. What are those two mitzvahs? Honor your father and mother, and a person, his father and mother, he shall fear, which we'll talk at greater length in a couple weeks probably. There's a mitzvah for a child to honor his parents and to give a fear for his parents. So now, maybe that's what it means. All mitzvahs that a child has to perform towards his father, so what are we going to say? That it's going to apply only to the son. And you want to say that it means nashim peturas, that women are free from this. Well, wait a minute. That's not so. The Hatanya we learned in Abraisha, when the Torah says, Ish, the Torah says the Pasuk, and Ish, he shall revere his father and mother. Let's take a look at the Pasuk. It's in Vayikra Yutes Gimel. Okay. Here's the Pasuk. Ish imo va'aviv tira'u. A man, his mother and father. What does the word tira'u mean?
They shall fear.
Okay, they shall fear. Now, if it meant he shall fear, how should the word have been said? Tira. In Hebrew grammar, the word tira means you or he shall fear. Okay? So now, tira'u, that u means they shall fear. So what does it mean? A man, a father, mother, they shall fear. So what's the plural? So initially when it says ish, I might have thought only a man has to fear his father, mother, and a woman doesn't have to. Right? But now it says tira'u, they shall fear. So it's saying they shall fear. So that's what the pasuk says. So when it says ish, ein li ela ish, I only know that a man has to fear his parents. Isha minayin. How to know that a woman has to fear her parents? The answer is, Kishu Omer Ish Imo V'aviv Tira'u. When the pasuk ends with that last word, Tira'u, in the plural construct, seems that the subject says man, but the fact says Tira'u means there's a plural over here, and Ish doesn't always have to mean only a man. So Hare Kan Shnaim, there's two. There's two, Tira'u. They must fear. So therefore, we cannot say that the Mishnah means, we're talking about the mitzvahs of a child that they have to do for the parents, only a man and not a woman. It's not true, because a woman also is obliged in that mitzvah for her parents. So what are we going to say is pshat in our Mishnah? So Amar Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda says, Hachi Kamar, this is what the Mishnah has to mean. The Mishnah has to mean, Kol mitzvahs haben hamutelas al ha'av lasos livno. It means the mitzvahs that are put, that a child has to do, that have been placed upon the father to make sure that the child has to do it, as I explained to you in the Mishnah. So that's what it means. All the mitzvahs that a son has to do, that a father, a parent, is obliged to make sure that the child performs the mitzvah. The Mishnah is saying, Anoshim chayovim v'noshim pituros. A man is chayiv and a woman is potter. Okay? Now, that's what the Mishnah means. The Gemara is now going to bring... Now, this is the Gemara analyzing the Mishnah and saying, this has to be the pshat in the Mishnah. Now, here's going to be what we call a bread and butter clause. The next three words is one that you should try to learn to commit to memory, the next three words. A lot of times, after the Gemara looks at a Mishnah and isn't sure how to learn the Mishnah, and they say, well, this must be the way, logically, the Mishnah has to be learned, they will then bring a brisa that, if you learn the brisa, it's obvious that that's what the Mishnah has to mean. Why the Gemara did not bring the brisa? I guess it felt we have a direct biblical source to prove our point. But still, the Mishnah wasn't clear. Even at the end of the day, it's not clear. We just said, well, it can't mean the other statement. It must mean this statement. Okay, so saying it must mean this statement. But now, the Gemara will bring a brisa that will prove to you that that's the way the brisa learned it, so it makes sense the Mishnah learned it. And that's what this next clause says. It's a forward clause. We're on 29A, Larry. That's what might be confusing you, because we made
see
a jump.
See what happens when you come late?
Anyway, Tanina, the Brisa says, must be an inside joke. Tanina laha ditana rabbanan. Okay, that's a good clause to learn. Tanina laha ditana rabbanan. What does that mean? Tanina laha, we have learned in our Mishnah, Tanina, we have learned laha for this in our Mishnah, ditana rabbanan, which the rabbis learned in a Brisa. Now we look at this Brisa, it's going to become clear. We don't want to assume the Brisa is conflicting with our Mishnah. So now that you have a clear Brisa that is saying exactly what the Mishnah would be saying, now we understand that's got to be shot in the Mishnah. What does the Brisa say? The following. And from this Brisa, then the Gemara is going to go step by step explaining this Brisa. It's going to be the sidetrack, as it were, to the flow of the Gemara. Ha'av chayiv b'no. A father is obliged to make sure that the child does the following mitzvahs. And it says the father and not the mother. Okay, so that's clear. Right away, that's the proof. Now we're just going to go through the details. The Bryce is going to list about six examples of that. But clearly, the Bryce already says a father is obliged to make the son perform certain mitzvahs. So now we understand what the Mishnah's first statement is saying. That the mitzvahs that a son has to do, that a parent is obliged to take care of, it revolves upon the father and not upon the mother. What does the Brisa say? A father is obliged to make sure the son has the following done. Number one, lamulo, to make sure he has a circumcision. That's the father's mitzvah to make sure he's circumcised. Number two, velif doso, and to make sure he has a pigeon haben, to make sure that he has been redeemed by the Kohen. Number three, v'lalam de Torah, and to teach him Torah. The Gemara later on will go to detail how much Torah is the father obliged to teach the son. From the simple wording of this brisa, how is your child supposed to learn Torah? From you teaching it to him. Sending him to school was a later innovation that came later in the times of the Gemara. But initially, it's a mitzvah the father sits down with his boy and teaches him Torah. Now you're going to ask, how is the father able to go to work and do all those things? That's a question. But later it evolved that if he can't teach him personally, then he has a financial responsibility to pay for a teacher to teach him. But really, a father has to teach, a son has to learn Torah. In the beginning, how's the kid going to learn Torah unless somebody teaches him? So the father has to teach him Torah. It's number three. Number four fits into what we saw the movie last night. Ulahasio isho, and to marry him off to a wife. He has to help him find a wife. He has to assist him in the preparation for marriage. All these things. You see from here, the Gemara's basic assumption is totally different than the secular assumption. And what is that? That the father has to marry off the son. He has to find a wife for the son. He has to set up the son to get ready for the marriage. Okay, this is all the father's responsibility. It's a given that the son doesn't go off and go find his own mate. You see that point over there? And we'll see in the Gemara later on, we'll show us proofs to all that. So how many do we have so far? 1, 2, 3, 4. And finally, ulalamdo umnas, and to teach him a profession. I said, now we're going to see more later, he's going to discuss what that means exactly. But he has to teach him a profession. How else is the kid supposed to be able to make a parnas? So you see, clear person has to, it's got to be from the father to teach him. Now the price it brings, we'll call it sechachom, opinion number one. V'yeshomrim, and some say, af lahasito b'mayim, even to teach him to swim in water. To teach him how to swim. The comment we'll see later on the Gemara will explain why. The simple answer is, in those days, when you traveled, you usually had to pass by, it would not be uncommon to pass by a river. And you'd have to know how to swim across the river in order to go to work. You'd have to pass through the bridges was a new innovation. But if he didn't know how to swim, that's the one pshat. The Hasidic pshat to that is to help teach him to swim, that when he's ready teaching him parnasa, he's going to be drowning in his parnasa, because he's going to be spending his whole day in parnasa. Father said, teach him how to swim through that and not to drown. He said, teach him to keep his head above water and not to be drowned out by the parnasa. He said, teach him how to balance making a parnasa and being a good Jew.
So does that last interpretation mean that it doesn't pertain to actual swimming?
No, it does where it applies. For example, nowadays, I don't think the mitzvah would necessarily apply, because a person does not need to know how to swim. Because you don't need to...
Literally
to swim. Because, you never have to cross a river. And if you're ever going to have to be in a situation where a plane, lands in the Atlantic Ocean, I don't think swimming is going to help you much. But anyway, but that's a Yesh Omrim's opinion. Okay, there are some who say, when I get my own better Gemara, I'll check up the Psak Halacha and all these things. But clearly, where it is necessary and vital, all these things are vital things. So in those days, it was much more vital to learn how to swim. That was plain and simple, learn how to swim. So all the swimming schools who cater to the Jewish audience of separate swimming things, they quote this Gemara, not as a Yesh Omrim. It's a father's obligation to teach his son how to swim. Okay, anyway, but that we'll see when we get later on in the Gemara. We're ahead of the game. And now Bryce adds one more statement. That's a very interesting statement. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Kol she'ena melamed es b'no umnes, whoever does not teach his son an umnes, who doesn't teach him a craft, Melamdo listus, is teaching him how to be a bandit. That's what he says. So the Gemara says, what? Listus al kadaita? Do you really think he's taught him how to be a bandit? Right? Father didn't do anything. Father didn't teach him how to be a robber. What does it mean? He taught him how to be a robber. What does that mean? So Gemara answered, it says, Malam Dali, he's teaching him how to be a bandit. He says, what do you mean he didn't teach him how to be a bandit? Gemara qualifies it. Ella, what does it mean? Ki ilu Malam Dolistus. It's as if he taught him how to be a bandit. Why? Because if you don't teach him how to make a parnasa, how is he going to survive? Then the kid on his own will learn to be on the street, as it were. If you don't keep the kid busy working all day, he's going to idle in the street. He idles in the street, doesn't have any money, wants to have things. What will he do? He'll become a bandit. He'll steal from other people. So it's as if you stole from him. The Gemara later on is going to ask a question. What is the statement of Rabbi Yehuda adding onto this brisa? In other words, the brisa had three statements. The first opinion said the five things you have to teach your son. One of them is to teach him a craft. Then there's a yesh omer says, and there's another thing, maybe a sixth thing to swim. The question is, what is Rabbi Yehuda adding to the original statement? Remember when you learn a brisa or a mishnah, when you put in you have a statement, a name with another statement. Now, if you're putting another name with a statement, it seems that it would be arguing. Remember? Cause what is Rabbi Yehuda really saying at the end of the day? You have to teach your son a craft. Isn't that what he's saying? So then what is he adding to the statement of the first rabbis who said one of the five things you have to do is to teach your child a craft? So what has he added? You know, you don't have Mishnayos who just say, you know, well, if you don't, it's like you teach him how to be. So, you know, that Musar idea over here. Does he agree with him? Obviously, he can't agree because why would he have to say his name as if he's saying it on his own? That's to understand the flow of a Mishnah or a Brisa. When you have a statement, A, and then it says, and Rabbi so-and-so says this, well, why would Rabbi so-and-so get up unless he had something new to say, and usually as an argument? So later on, the Gemara is going to discuss what is the argument over here. So let's take a quick look at how we devised the notes over here. This is how I broke it up here.
Just asking a question.
Yeah.
So certain Haredim today do not teach their son a craft. How do they get around this?
Okay. First of all, let me answer number one. Most Haredim do teach their children a craft. Most do.
I agree.
Those who don't say there has to be a group of people who learn Torah their whole lives. When I was staying by the Slonim Rashiva's table, we were talking about it, and he said, when God divided up the Jewish people into 12 tribes, one tribe, Levi, their job was not to work. Their job was to learn Torah and to serve in the temple. Remember, a Kohen who worked in the temple, he only worked 2 weeks out of the year. The other 50 weeks, he was learning Torah and teaching Torah. So God wants one tribe, 1/12 of the Jewish people to not work. 1/12 have to be scholars. Okay? If we don't have at least 1/12 of the Jewish people as scholars, the nation will not survive. So therefore, those Haredim feel if they have children who are very intelligent, they have to grow up to be scholars. That's all. And again, it's no different than any university. You know, I'd like to know, there's a lot of people in university, professors, what do they do all day long? Teaching, they zicher don't teach. Because none of them know how to teach. They maybe give, you know, one class a day. The TAs grade all the papers. What do they do the rest of the day? They do research. Go to any university. Right? Most of them are terrible teachers. They don't know how to teach. So what do they do all day long? They sit and kvetch a bank, to use the Yiddish example. They sit on their tuchuses and they read and they research and they get over $100,000 a year to do nothing. No, what are you talking about? He's going to do research on something. He's going to discover the mating habits of the tzitzit fly. It's very important for the world. Okay, so guess what? You have a boy who's in yeshiva who he is doing when we were in the yeshiva, so we tried to get government grants. In the United States, you can get Pell grants, all kinds of grants. But you'd have to have a job in the yeshiva. So I was from a poor home, so I was eligible for grants, but I have to have a job. So my job was I did research. And I am doing, I'm researching the Talmud to know what the law is. So therefore, we definitely do not have close to 1/12 of the Israeli population sitting and learning. Definitely not. So that's why, you know, for those who are able to learn Torah, they have to be learning Torah. Okay, so I broke this down into two sugyas. Sugya one, what does, quote, a mitzvah of the son on the father mean? So the question of understanding, what does that mean? The possible answer, if it means a mitzvah that the son must do for the father, women are not exempt. That is not so. As we see from the Brisa, a man will fear his father and mother. Tira'u, the plural form of will fear, teaches that also women are obligated. So the final answer for you it is, it refers to a mitzvah that the father must perform on his son. Men are obligated, women are exempt, which segues what I call the next sukkah. What are the mitzvahs of the father on his son and the sources for them? So this Brisa that we quoted, the five mitzvahs, and then the sixth opinion and the explanation that Isav teaches him robbery. Tomorrow we're going to go to the halachic source that asks us to find out what is the source that a father is obligated to circumcise his son and not a mother to circumcise.